Hey everyone, welcome to the Member Lounge podcast. In this podcast, you learn how to grow your association membership. I'm your host, Farhad Khan. I'm the CEO of Member Lounge. And if you don't know about us, Member Lounge is like a private LinkedIn platform for your members that automates your member engagement. And once again, this is a live recording of our podcast. If you're joining us live today, we're so excited to have you. We got so many questions from the audience already. But if you have any more questions during the episode, please submit them on Zoom chat. Okay, so with that, I want to introduce our co-host, Bruce Rosenthal. Bruce, do you want to say a few words about yourself?
Sure, I'd be glad to. I've worked with associations for many years on staff and as a consultant, and I now help associations create sponsorship programs to increase revenue and member value.
That's wonderful. And I'm so excited to have Rene Rodriguez today. Rene is the author of the best-selling book, Amplify Your Influence. I met Rene at a conference in like Washington, D.C., I think like earlier this year. I was so excited to hear the message that I had to share the same message to our audience as well. Rene, thank you so much for joining us. Can you start by telling us a bit about yourself?
Well, thank you for having me here. Yeah, my background is in behavioral neuroscience, but more on the applied science. And so I've had the fortunate opportunity for the last 30 years to apply it in sales organizations, leadership, dynamics, change management, and some of the most difficult work environments in financial services to creating culture change, to increasing membership, to communicating an idea. So at the end of the day, my goal is to, and if you use these methodologies, it makes it impossible for you to be misunderstood. And that's sort of the goal and the vision.
That's fantastic. And by the way, if you know any of your colleagues like in the audience who should be here, please send them the Zoom link so they can join the live recording as well. Alrighty. So Rene, so as we go through the podcast episode, I think like I have a few very key questions for you. So as a leader, most of the times like we try to start by influencing our own team members first. Like as a leader, the managers, D-level, C-level, influencing them is very important. And then from there, we want to expand out to the whole membership and then our whole audience for the prospective membership. So if you can maybe like talk about that a little, but like just to start off, what do people get wrong about influence in general?
Yeah, I think, well, there's a big question of influence versus manipulation. And it is in our human nature to want to influence behavior. And manipulation is something that happens all the time. People manipulate prices to get them to buy. Your association might offer a discount to get people to join. Those are price manipulation or marketing manipulators. But then there's the underhanded manipulation of things. There's the over extreme use of persuasion and influence done to the disservice of another person. That would be how I define the manipulation that people don't want. It's the extreme use of these skill sets done at the expense of somebody else and done underhandedly. Influence, though, is about truly bringing a good idea to the surface and helping people see the possibility of one thing or another. And if you believe in what's good, I mean, we try to influence our children to stay away from drugs and alcohol, to do well in school and to study hard, to be good human beings. We try to influence the people that work for us to fully engage in what's happening, influence members to join and to retain and stay on. So influence is happening every day. And when you realize that it is a science and it can be learned, it's not something you're born with. That's one of the biggest misnomers. Leaders are not born, they're made. Salespeople are not born, they're made. These are things that happen through training and skill development, practice, and mastery over time. And so the good news is that influence is a science and it can be learned.
That's wonderful. So Rene, in your book, Amplify Your Influence, I think like there were some key ideas. Do you want to share the key message? Like what do people get wrong and what should we do instead?
Well, I think I look at the process of influence as sort of beginning from the inside out. I can teach you facial expressions, body language, sequencing, timing, voice inflection, structure of language. We can learn all that stuff, but a person doesn't know who they are. Where they come from. I don't like teaching skill sets on what I would call an empty soul. And so for me, there's an internal discovery of who are you, what do you do, what makes you unique? Those three basic questions. And most people just answer those in a very routine basis. Hi, my name is Renee. I'm a keynote speaker. And what makes me unique is I like neuroscience. Okay. And that's sort of a bulleted list. And it's nothing inspiring about that. There's nothing, you know, hi, I'm John, I'm a financial advisor, and I really care about my clients. You know, hi, I'm Bruce, and I do here, and I do that, right? It's like, hi, I'm Farhad, and I do this, I do that. There's nothing that really inspires us. And so, yeah, I guess another example might be, We could actually do a live demonstration of what that would look like and how we change that. And so let's, since we just heard Bruce's example, you know, hey Bruce, what do you do? Hey, my name is Bruce, and I've been doing this for so long. I would say, Bruce, let's revamp. Do you remember what you said originally?
Yes. So I
What
said
did you say?
I said I had been working with and for associations for many years, and I'm now helping associations create sponsorship programs to increase revenue and member value.
What I love about that is that I can just tell by how long you've been doing it, your conviction in your voice, that you have, there's so much more to that story. Would you agree in terms of why you do this?
Yes.
And so most people would want to say, how do I communicate all of that to a marketplace? And every single one of your members right now listening, they want to have a better introduction than here's what I do, here's why I do it, and here's what makes me unique. And so I'll give you an example. So Bruce, give me two things about you that really make you unique or that you're passionate about, things that you value. Like I'm empathetic, I work hard. Give me an example.
Well, something even a little more substantive. So I recently wrote a book, Mastering Association Corporate Sponsorships, to pull
Well, here, no,
together
hold
what
on, hold
I've.
on, hold on. We're going to make it
Okay.
even simpler. It was simpler because
Okay.
the brain doesn't respond to all that yet. I just want me to give you two words, empathetic or value. Watch where we go, because we're going to go to that. Because what you were about to tell us, we need, but just a little further down the line
Okay.
right now. If you remember, if you think about it from the brain perspective, the brain is first trying to assess, are you going to kill me? Am I safe with you? Right? That's what the brain does. And it, you ever met somebody, you tell them your name, you hear their name, you walk away, you go, what was their name? And they literally just told you. There's a critical period in the brain in the time of meeting someone in meetings that people aren't get, they're not collecting knowledge. They're assessing safety. And not even physical safety. They're assessing psychological safety. And those times is what I tell people is, would you plant a seed in cement? We wouldn't. Like what you were just about to go through is so ridiculously valuable. I want to save that seed until we till the soil for them to really hear your message. And that's what we're really talking about. So give me two words that make you unique, Bruce. Anything you want.
Interested and empathetic.
Empathetic. Okay, so let's just go with the word empathetic. Would you say that empathy is a part of your value system?
Yes.
Wonderful. So now we can use some science. If empathy is part of your value system, then we know that your values are formulated between the ages of 9 to 13. And so I want to know between that time period, because you didn't just decide to be empathetic recently. You've been empathetic most of your life. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's kind of built into who you are, literally built in, hardwired into you. So I want to know between the ages of 9 to 13, who was around and what happened for them to, for this, the world to sort of hardwire empathy into Bruce. And what's really cool is that once we know that this is, you're not new with empathy. You've been doing empathy for a long time. So you've got your doctorate in empathy, but we need to know how that happened. So what I want you to think about is, I want you to think about, when we think about 9 to 13, what happened, who was around, it triggers one of two types of stories. Either what we call a lighthouse story, meaning someone was in your life that was a true beacon of light for empathy. They shined the way and you followed them. They were the role model. And you just decided to continue in their light. Or what a lot of us have, myself included, we have foghorns, people that were the warning sign. They were the opposite of empathy. They showed no empathy at all. And we felt the darkness of that. And we said, you know what? I don't want to be that. I want to bring light to where I had darkness. And so you became a lighthouse for empathy. So between your ages of 9 to 13, who comes to mind when it comes to word empathy? And were they a lighthouse or a foghorn?
Oh, good question. I would say a lighthouse. I would say, yeah, in that age range, probably my dad. He was in the insurance business, which was about helping people with their businesses, helping people with their life insurance. So I think that kind of, if I can think of anything at that young age, it was probably that sort of service and commitment to helping people.
I love that. And if you notice how Bruce kind of lit up when he talked about his dad, right? You can tell that you're very fond of your dad, respect your dad. He's even smiling now as he brings it up. And what I tell people is, if you want to learn, listen to what people value when they speak. Listen to their facial expressions and pay attention to where they light up, because there's some sort of involuntary things that really tell you what's important to them. And so what I would say is, tell me a story about your father between the ages of 9 to 13 and how he was a lighthouse for you when it came to empathy. And I want you to get specific. I remember this one time, and try to get as specific as you can, and just simple story. Like, how did you know he was empathetic?
I remember him going off in the evening to meet with clients. I mean, there were three kids in the house and my mom, and he'd hop in the car and go to evening appointments and sit in people's living rooms and talk to them about, insurance protection for their families and businesses.
Do you remember any specific story, a specific time? Like how you knew that he did that? There was
No,
this
I
one
do.
time.
I always remember him doing that when I was at that age, because often, with usually at that time the husband working, and so the time you'd talk with your spouse, usually wife at that time, it was usually evening appointments. So he'd be leaving the family, either coming home from work late or going after dinner and leaving the family and getting dressed
When
up in the
did
evening and going out and meeting with clients.
and when did you learn? Because as a kid, we can interpret that as dad's not around, he works too much. But then at some point, we learned that he did it because he really cared about these families and he was really helping them with something. When did you learn that?
I would say it's when he was an independent insurance agent. And I remember when we were kids driving in the car, we'd drive past the Allstate building and he'd said, "That's the Allstate building. If you go to Allstate, you're going to buy an Allstate policy. If you come to me, I can price and package a policy through whatever insurance company can provide the best deal for your family and your business."
And what did that mean to you as a kid? Because you sound like an adult telling a kid's story. What did the kid feel? Right?
I'm not sure. I don't think I understood it as much at that time, but every time we drove past the Allstate building, he'd say, it'd be like, "Boo, Allstate, go to an independent insurance agent. They can provide a better insurance coverage for you."
Like what you had was an understanding that he cared, though. How did you know that he cared?
Well, I did not see him as the absentee dad. He was around most of the time. He also was interested in improving himself to improve his clients. So I remember also when, probably in that age range, he was studying for his certification, certified life underwriter. We may have an association in the audience representing those folks. And he sat on the kitchen table and then did his studying to pass his certification exams.
So he took it real serious. So let me ask you a question. If I were to say, okay, so you watch your father willing to work tirelessly to help other people with a very important thing in their life, which is insurance. I tell people this insurance shows up to you, for you when no one else does, right? That's the, but you have to think about some of the most difficult times of your life and to think ahead and care enough to really communicate that. And let me guess, when it comes to your members, do you also see yourself showing up for them in those late nights when they're needed? Making sure that their needs are taken care of, being that person when no one shows up, Bruce is probably going to be there for him.
Yeah, I think in my previous roles on staff of associations and now working as a consultant to associations, yes, it's usually folks come to the staff of an association or to a consultant with
But
their
what about your
problems.
approach? But what about your approach? How did you take it? Because now it seems like you've graduated towards a consulting role, but how do you take what you learned from dad to apply to what you do now?
I think it's continuing on that path of they have a challenge. How can I help them find a solution?
I'm just going to give you a little creative freedom from a time perspective. Somebody says, hey, introduce yourself and what do you do? You can say, I remember instead of saying, hi, my name is Bruce and this is what I do, like all those different pieces where the brain isn't really fully there. When you begin with story, it immediately engages the brain. They call it a cold start. And so, and I'll explain to you story in a minute in terms of what happens in the brain. But if you say, I remember as a kid growing up, my father sold insurance and he was always, usually at nighttime, he'd get the phone call and he'd have to leave and he'd have to go meet with these families. And he'd sit with them at dinner and he'd have some of the most difficult conversations around the potential of, of really bad things happening. And the value of that was it was a difficult conversation, but he knew at the end of the day that if some of those tragedies would happen, that nobody would be around, but that insurance policy would always be there for them. And so my father had this amazing ability to help people see ahead of time what they didn't see for themselves. And I just remember how committed he was to be able to see their see what was going on, and he was always there. And I even remember walking driving by Allstate and he'd say, if you go in there, you're gonna have to buy in that policy. But when you work with me, I get you have all these other options and I get a chance to really listen to the customer. And the reason I share that with you is that, me as a consultant here for the associations, I also see my role in the same way. In my years and 45 years of doing this work, I see some of the challenges ahead of time that others don't. And my role is to help you foresee those challenges so that we can avoid them in the coming months and years. And so it's great to be here for you. And of course, I'm here to answer any questions. Now, all of a sudden, you framed yourself in this amazing place where you take your rich history, which kind of hit me as I was talking. I'm like, no, the way he's like his father as a consultant, you're here to help us see things before they happen. That's why you're here. You're helping you help us save the dumb tax of everything that's happening. And so then it dawned on me as I was talking, but that's the process of how you take even something as simple as an introduction and elevate it through story. which is really at the core of what the book is about. How does it feel, Bruce, to hear that that way? Because I'm
That's
here seeing you
very
smile.
impressive. No, you're absolutely right. And you, thanks for framing it that way. We've all heard that, oh, yes, it's about stories, but it's, yeah, we probably haven't thought about, oh, when we're asked that quick question, who are you? What do you do? Of doing it as a story. And that's, I assume you're explaining it that way, Renee, because that's what people are going to remember. So whether it's an hour later or a week later, it's like, oh, I don't even remember his name, but I remember the story.
Well, there's that guy that shows up just like his dad. I mean, how cool, right? And what's interesting is the question, we get caught up in question traps all the time, like, who are you? What do you do? What makes you unique? And or introduce yourself. And even, I saw the first question, Renee, tell us about what you do. That's a question trap. And the question trap falls into three category or three components. One, most people don't put much thought into the questions that they ask. We feel compelled to answer questions that are asked of us, even if they're not good questions. And the person asking the question is leading. So I feel compelled to let somebody lead me down a path that they didn't put much thought into. And so we as influencers in associations, a dumb question could be, well, what's the cost of the association? What's this going to cost me on a yearly basis? Well, what they should ask is, what's the ROI of being around this? How many ideas will I gather? And how can I turn around my association through what you guys offer? How do I make my association free through the massive value that you guys bring to us? What are other stories like mine that have benefited from being part of? Those are rich questions. But if we wait for rich questions to give rich answers, we're going to be waiting a long time. We have to learn to give rich questions in the face of dumb questions and immature questions or even unseasoned questions. And so with that, when we break that rule, we don't feel compelled to answer that, but we can really drive a powerful message through that. It becomes really, really powerful.
So a question or challenge, Renee. So I think some of our good friends here in the association world believe we're the association of blank, fill in the blank, doctors, lawyers, nurses, educators. We are the authority. We are sole source. Everybody knows who we are. We're good to go. And I think what I often talk about is in this competitive environment, there is no sole source anymore because anybody can go to AI or Google or some other competitor. But I think there are still organizations, with all due respect to some of the folks in the audience and who will be listening to this, who believe their association is sole source. We are the association of X. We are the experts. We're good to go. How do we convince those folks? There needs to be a story. There needs to be that influence, inspiration, feeling of safety.
A piece of chicken with no story ends up on a dollar menu at KFC. But a piece of chicken with a story, I'd pay $200 to eat off a tasting menu in a high-end restaurant. Still just chicken. There are very few patent monopolies out there. And to your point, AI has made information available to everyone. So information is not what's going to set us apart anymore. Even expertise is very difficult to use as a differentiator. It's going to come down in this artificial world to our humanity, our ability to listen to empathize and to really offer solutions that are tailored to somebody through the nuances that maybe AI can't pick up just yet. That trust that happens between human to human versus human to machine. And the challenge is that you have a generation that's trusting humans or machines even more than humans in some cases. Well, then I think it's incumbent upon us to get out in front and remind them of the humanity. They only trust them because they have lacked. They've been stuck in their phones using their thumbs, but they lack that ability to stand eye to eye. I promise you this, a young boy that thinks that texting is everything, when he's in the face of the girl he's got a crush on, he'll remember what humanity is real quick. When you're facing a problem and a challenge and you don't have a solution, and somebody who's been there for 45 years, Bruce, sits back and says, let me walk you through the 45 times I've been through this and what we can do. There's nothing more comforting than that human to human interaction. We should still be leveraging AI, but we need to leverage AI and AI needs to be led by leaders who remember that every single thing that we do has a human story, human spirit behind it. And to me, I love artificial intelligence. But there's so much more to it than that. And let's not forget the word artificial. It means to be invented by humans, not human. I mean, nobody wants artificial love, artificial empathy, artificial compassion, artificial wisdom. Like, we want the human side of this to be enhanced through technology. That's great. But I think the way that we stand out is the humanness and humanity.
On that note, We are extremely busy every single day working with our team members, colleagues in general. We often actually have to influence our colleagues as well to maybe initiate projects or get buy-in from our bosses, right? So in a case like that where you are pressed for time, pressed for resources, you know, like how would you apply this scenario? How would you apply storytelling in that case within your team?
You know, it's I look at storytelling as a club in the golf bag. And for those of you who know golf, you know the analogy that there's more than one club in the bag for a reason. But if I were to say, what's the best golf club to use? And somebody says the driver, I said, well, what if you're on the putting green? The only answer to that question is the one that is needed for the job at hand. You would never go, if somebody says, I need you to fix something in my house, you'd never grab your favorite tool and then assess the situation. You would assess the situation first, then go back to your toolbox and grab the one that's most appropriate. Storytelling is a tool. It may not be the right one. You can't go into a budget meeting and someone says, you know, Farhad, are we on budget or off budget? And you go, well, I remember when I was a kid. And they're going, no. We need a number. Are a yes or a no? And so there's a tool there. Even Shark Tank, when you're raising money, they begin with, hi, my name is, and we are seeking X amount of dollars for X percentage of the company. And they go, cool, now I know the playground. Then the story comes into play. So it's a numbers first, story second environment. In most cases, we're pretty good in a story first. Sales and finance, it's numbers first. You don't want a salesperson to say, well, how many calls did you make yesterday? Well, you know, it's been kind of one of this year. No. How many calls did you make? In fact, we're a little facetious when we do sales training, is we teach managers to manage from a tiny little box. And when somebody gives too many stories, we just pull out the little box and we put it there. And you say, John, you know why I make that box so small? So a story didn't fit. I need a number. How many X did you do yesterday? And so but now the story matters secondly, because let's say there was some extenuating factor or something happened. There is a condition in the marketplace that we can address, but there's an accountability to a number first. But in a meeting, when you're talking about budgets and trying to secure things, there has to be a logical component to that. That is, you know, go back to Aristotle's rhetorical triangle, his three-legged stool of ethos, pathos, and logos. We have to have ethos, which is our credibility and character. We have to live the things. Like, you wouldn't want me doing a workshop on how to grow hair. Like, that's not something you'd want. You wouldn't even want me doing a workshop on the menstrual cycle and why women are doing it wrong. Clearly, I'm not the one to be doing that workshop. I don't have any ethos, no credibility. We need pathos. We need an emotional connection, a passionate connection, in a tone of voice, and what we do through story, because really to engage the emotions and get people to act on. But we also need logos, which is a logical appeal. There has to be a logical reason to back up all of these things. It's one of the reasons that we lean so heavily into neuroscience, as we're talking about these quote unquote soft skills like storytelling and empathy. But yet it's backed by the hard science. When you put those together, you realize it's one of the most, we call it the hard cost of soft issues. When you don't pay attention to those things, they're a reality. And so I think you have to assess the situation and make sure that you're addressing the needs of the individual. But at the end of the day, when it comes to raising money, when it comes to true engagement, it's not a logical decision. Most people that invest money are, have to have some irrationality involved. There has to be some emotional connection, a gut feel. And sometimes a gut feel can't be quantified. But getting people's buy-in, you have to have the narrative, you have to have the story, and that's only done through storytelling in some way, shape, or form.
Got
And
it.
it'll give you a lot. I don't know if I answered the question. Feel free to dig deeper and ask a follow-up to that.
No, that's great. That's great. Yeah. So that reminds me that like when you're trying to like get buy-in like for a project or something from within your team or the boss in general, I guess like you cannot rely on that one meeting where you actually get the approval, right? So you have to have that connection, that trust built in over a period of time so that like when you present the final proposal or whatever, it's much easier for the person to say yes. So we need to make it easy for the person to say yes from two ways. Number one, the numbers make sense, the ROI makes sense, but also like me as a person have the credibility. I have built a connection with the decision maker for a long time. So whatever I say is more trusted by that individual. So we cannot rely on that one meeting. It has to be built over a period of time.
Yes, you are so accurate on that. I tell people this is the importance of personal brand and leadership brand right now, because your brand shows up to a meeting before you do. Your brand remains after you leave. And some of us have a brand of being somebody who keeps promises and does well, and everything you touch turns into gold. Some of us have a brand that says, you know, shows up and says, hey, whatever so and so says, they tend to overpromise, so take it with a grain of salt. And so there's a history and a what we call a brand promise that follows everybody and precedes everybody. And if you are intentional about that through social media, through books that you've written, through testimonials, through a good website, through your communications, your email list, whatever it is that you use, and people know who you are, it's much easier. I'll give you an example. If I walk into a presentation and everyone's holding my book, it is a much easier time to connect with people because they've already, my brand has preceded them. But if I walk into saying, you know, I've never heard from you, there's some work to do ahead of time to establish a credibility and to build the trust. And so personal branding, the use of social media in a proper format, and I think, by the way, from a leadership perspective, social media is so much more than sales and marketing. It is a leadership communication tool. Because if I'm not trying to grow followers, but I put on my social media, my family, what I believe, things that I do for charity, and I give people access to my, you know, I work out, I go on walks with a dog, whatever it is, and people that work for me are watching this. If they watch enough of it, they start believing that they know you. And when you show up, it's a continuation of a relationship that already existed. I can't tell you how many times that people that I have followed for years, I meet them for the first time and I'm like, it's so good seeing you again. And they're like, again, this is our first meeting. I'm like, really? Are we sure? And we had, it took us a half an hour to figure out. I'm like, oh my God, like this is our first time meeting. But I felt like I knew you. And so there's a real cool intentional use of relationship building through social media. It has nothing to do with followers and likes and no vanity metrics. It has to do with leadership branding, who I am, and building a connection to the people that I work with.
René, so on that note, on social media, I think we kind of understand how to create a brand. You have to be present there. But when you're kind of trying to influence your members, right? So, and members may or may not be on social media, right? So they're on a variety of different channels. How would you apply this idea overall when you don't even know if all members will get the message?
Yeah, it's social media. That's why you have to be use multiple channels, right? So there's a thing of, you know, one, when people hear about you, the first thing that we do is we Google you or search you on social media. What's your Instagram? And you know, LinkedIn is that has a component of that from a business perspective. But Instagram, LinkedIn, even YouTube, all those things are going to be places that people go and vet you out. And to me, it's nice that you go through and communicate your story as it comes. But what happens when people search for you? What story will they get? That's where you curate your grid. You curate the messaging and the things that are on there to ensure that it's communicating the right things. And you know, I've had clients who I've had to go through, and I just say, well, so from what I can tell, you looks like you like to go to Vegas and buy drinks and bottle service and do raves. No, I was just that was my kid. He was really excited. He went there. I'm like, oh, but it looks like you. Oh. We don't realize we're communicating certain things. Oh, okay. You know, so there's we have to pay attention to what we're communicating out to the world because you will be found. But you know, the other thing too, it's like, are you willing to commit to something for a few years? I did social media for 13, 12, 13 years without any result. But I kept doing it. And then finally we figured out the formulas, and now we're in millions of followers. But it was a formula, but we didn't give up. And somebody's like, well, I've been doing it for 2 months and nothing's happening. I'm like, 2 months? You're not even. I don't even know what to say to that. It's just we. It's not that fast. And there's, by the way, billions of people trying to compete for that attention right now. So give yourself some time. Stay consistent. Make sure that your brand is on point. All of those different things, so that when people do go find you, there's a consistency to it.
Right. And I guess, René, when you mentioned channels, so we have to use different channels, different social media. I think in the case of an association, they also have their online community there. So the online community is also a channel. So we need to make sure that we are not just looking at the social media outside, but also the internal
Yes.
communities, the pockets that we have where we know members actually hang out. So the association staff have to have a good, meaningful presence there as well, telling their story.
Yeah, and it sounds like, you know, from what I understand, what you guys do, what a great place to bring somebody. Like, what's the call to action on social media? Not to sell something, but if you build value within that community, you know, come, hey, you know, we can do this. We're going to learn more about this here. Here's a free community. Come in. Lots of free resources. People will love a curated community. Especially if it solves a real problem. Like if you like baseball cards, you'll join a baseball card community. If you like Ford, you know, 1965 Ford F1 Ford trucks, and there's a group for that, it's going to have members. In fact, the more niched it is, the more members it'll probably have because there's so many people in the world. And it feels so paradoxical, but it's true. And so the more broad you are and the more diluted your message is, the harder it is to you to find people. So part of it's getting clear of what you believe, what you're about, and being okay not being for everyone. It's got to be for the right people. Another example of this, by the way, is in trade show strategy. And you know, people think volume and traffic is king. It's not. So the example I always gave is saying, let's use a giveaway at a trade show. Everybody gives things away. And this one group was giving away TVs, a free flat screen TV. And they were an ink toner company. They sold ink toner. I would sign up for a free TV. Maybe you guys would too, but I have no need for ink toner. So I would be an unqualified prospect signing up to win a free TV. But look at how many entries we get. Well, how many actually mattered? Your giveaway should be the filter. We're giving away 5 year supply of ink toner. I wouldn't sign up for that. But if I was the purchasing department at a company, I would definitely sign up for that. And so the giveaway is the what vetted it out. And so the content that we choose and the things that we do should be the things that vet out who comes and gets that information. You know, if there's a specific problem that you guys solve that's really just unique to these associations, then maybe you give away scripting in your association, in the community for this specific problem, and you'll attract people for that specific issue.
Well, and this is where it flips the model with sponsorships, which for many decades have been the more people in the room, the more expensive the sponsorship. But now we find, especially with smartphones, you could be introduced at the general session and everybody's going to be looking down at their phones. So when I talk to companies, they would say, wow, instead of speaking at that general session in front of 10,000 people, how about if I host three focus groups for 20 people each? And the association says, oh, well, what value can they? That's only 60 people. But it's kind of that measurement. It's, yeah, wow, if that
60
company
right
can
people.
meet exactly the right people in the right place, and if that kind of play it down to, you meet them, you have some meetings, you have some contract proposals, you get one signed contract from 60 people, that could be a better ROI than kind of waving high at the general session in front of 10,000. So but it flips the whole model of the way we've sold sponsorships for 100 years.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, would you rather be in a room of 3,000 with Tony Robbins or in a room of 30 with Tony Robbins? There's an exclusivity there of you've done the work to qualify people and they're vetted out and it works.
Yeah. So on that note, I guess we understand how to create influence, how to create the brand of one person. So me as a leader, when you as a leader, I think it's understandable. Now, as an association who often does not actually have like one face to associate with, how would you build a brand?
When you're talking about if it has only one face, to me, it's you obviously have to be careful of putting a face to an organization, right? Because if the face leaves, it brings it with it. To me, I would think about it as a leadership brand. And I would have all the leadership, anybody who's customer facing, have some level of visibility. But I, you know, from a strategic perspective, if I'm the association, I would want that leadership brand to have the association logo tied right next to it. And so you're associating those two pieces together. And you know, the what and here's the funny thing is that most people don't even understand what branding is. I've come to learn that over the last 10 years. Is we talk about branding, and we just don't most people don't even understand it. They say, well, it's a reputation. It's the sort of high level. I'm like, great, what does that mean? Isn't reputation the outcome of the brand? But what is the brand? Like, what does that mean? You know, if you've ever seen those metal things that they heat up and they burn them onto the cattle, they say that's the brand. I'm like, no, that's the branding iron. That's the process of branding. Well, what is branding? Oh, is it that little symbol at the end? No, that's the logo. Well, is that the brand? No, that's the logo. Well, what's the brand? The brand is the reason why you would allow that burned onto your skin. Because I wouldn't allow somebody else's logo to be tattooed on my skin. I wouldn't allow some cattle prod to be done that. But for some reason, the movie Yellowstone, those people allowed it. And for some reason, Harley Davidson is the number one tattoo in the world. The brand is the reason why you would allow that. Well, what's the reason? And then we start getting into tougher questions. Well, if you think a look at the, you know, Seth Godin had a great example of the difference between a logo and a brand. And he used Nike and Hyatt as an example. And he said, what if Hyatt and Nike changed products? Hyatt made a shoe, Nike made hotels. Could you imagine what a Nike hotel would look like? We'd all say, absolutely. It'd be modern. The gym would be the best gym in hotel history. The gift shop would have shoes and swag. The seats were probably made out of basketball or football leather. It'd probably have games and sports and TVs. You watch every sport you want. I mean, it would be a really cool hotel. You'd know if you were in the lobby, you were in a Nike hotel, in the room, everything, the bathroom, it would all reflect the locker room. It would have something there. And so, but what if Hyatt made a shoe? Could you imagine what a Hyatt shoe would look like? It's a pretty hard one. Point A to point B, maybe shoe. I put these into ChatGPT and it came out with the most beautiful picture of a Nike hotel. And it came out with the most basic, ugly, point A to point B shoe for Hyatt. Now, what does that mean? Well, there's a difference between a brand and a logo. And so the best way to do this, and so Farhad, are you married by chance? Or
Yes.
is you? So Farhad, let's go back to this is the best way I've understood brands. Let's go back to your first date with your wife, and you knew that this was the girl of your dreams, and you wanted to be with it with her, and you wanted to see her again. So you muster up the courage to say, you know what, hey, I had a great time tonight. I would love to see you again. And she looks at you and plays it cool, and she says, you know what, Farhad, I'm not sure yet, but I'll let you know. She turns around and then turns back around and says, but if I were to see you again, it has to be under one condition. And she looks you up and down and she says, you have to promise me not to wear that shirt because that shirt, that is an unfair advantage. She winks at you and she walks away. You see, he's feeling it now. How are you feeling every time you wear that shirt, Farhad? Like a
Feeling
million
great
bucks?
normally.
Feeling
Yep,
great, right?
sure.
Does
Yep.
it have anything to do with the quality of the shirt?
Probably not. Just the
The
perception.
manufacturer,
That's nope.
the quality of the material. So none of the value propositions mattered in branding. What mattered were two things. One, an emotion that elicited in you and a promise it made you. And this is where branding finally started understanding it. The emotion was confidence, but the promise was, if I wear this shirt, I can have the girl of my dreams. That's brand. Brand Jordan. When I was a kid, I'd wear a pair of Jordans. I thought I could run faster and jump higher. And so, what was the brand promise of Jordan? If you wear these shoes, you could be like Mike. So, if I wear these shoes, I can be like that guy flying through the air, winning the championships and looking graceful, winning the dunk contests. That's why Nike never did commercials about the quality of the leather or the science behind it. None of it. It was about this guy graceful in the air, being the best basketball player ever lived. And they would elicit that emotion, and it made us a promise. If you can do this, you'll be just like them. And so when you think about it, what's the brand of your association? What is it, if I join your association, what promise are you making me? And it has very little to do with the logical. Sometimes there's certain groups that you join us, you'll become a millionaire. I know some coaching groups that can make that promise. And they do it. And they can charge what they want. I know some associations that you join, and I don't know what I'm going to get here. And if they don't know what they're going to get, pretty soon they're going to look at that invoice and go, I can better spend that somewhere else. So the clearer we get on the brand promise, at the emotion and the underlying promise, if I do this, I get this. Now we're getting clear. That's branding. And then, by the way, you attach a logo to that emotion. And then the sight of that emotion, that logo elicits the emotion and the trust that comes along with it. I'm going to give Hyatt a shout out here. You're in the middle of a foreign country. You don't know where you're going to stay. You don't recognize anybody. You don't feel safe. You see hostels. You see places that you don't understand. And all of a sudden, in the distance, you see a Hyatt logo. Where are you staying? You're staying at the Hyatt because you know the promise is that's a safe hotel. I'll be safe. There's a process, procedure to it. They have a reputation to uphold. They cannot afford danger. And so there is a brand promise there. It may not be one of glam and glitz, but it is reliable. That makes
Ren,
sense?
absolutely, Rene. With that, like, I want to share a very quick story. this actually happened to me when we were traveling to Barcelona earlier this year. And like I had booked an Airbnb for me and my wife. And then like on the flight, my wife realized that I booked an Airbnb, which she did not fully appreciate, like that particular location, right? And then like while on the flight, she was like, why didn't you tell me that you booked this and da, 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 right? And then like eventually while on the flight, she booked a Hilton. We were on the flight. She canceled the Airbnb. She booked a Hilton that we didn't know. She didn't check the reviews, you know, but the Hilton brand was there and she liked it and she booked it for, I think, twice the price, right? So she didn't care what the price was, but the trust and the value was so high to her.
In price does not matter in that moment. And that is what people don't realize. And the price of trust and the value of trust. And then the question is how do you create that? That's where testimonials come into play. That's where communications come into play. That's where the humanity side, the human connection comes into play, but also the clarity of our language to communicate this over and over and over and over again. And that's where it comes into play. So great story. I love that. Perfect example.
So what I'm hearing in that case is that like for an organization, like an association, we have to have a number of like brand ambassadors who are the leaders who have to kind of like reinforce that brand again and again to the community from their own voice. So, and it has to be more than one person, that if one person leaves, we don't lose that connection altogether. Is that what you're saying, Rene?
I would say 100%, yeah. Yeah. And when we think about it from that perspective, your community becomes your brand ambassador. Because when you get into like story branding, Donald Miller, the more you can make the customer the hero, the more they're going to shout your name from the rooftops. Look what they did for me. And that is where it really takes on a really fun virality, if you will.
How do you, Renee, infuse that brand and that promise internally? So you can have a great CEO, whether it's 5 staff or 5,000 staff. How do you get the organization to be behind that?
Great question. So a couple years ago, I took a Ritz-Carlton cruise. We're going to take a cruise, and I wanted to do a really nice one because I'd always heard about Ritz and I wanted a story from it. And so we did it. And you got 3 concierges, you got a butler. Like every single person was perfect. Perfect. And I remember talking to our concierge. He came to lunch and I looked at him. I said, I have a question. How is it that every single staff member here is so good, is so trained and just literally perfect? And he said, our motto is simple here, Renee, Mr. Rodriguez. We are ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. Our quarters are the exact same as yours, just located below you. We all serve each other. We get our bed made 3 times a day. We have food made just like you. We are treated with the same level of respect that you are. And so it becomes very easy for us to deliver that back to you. Four Seasons said the same thing. When you build a Four Seasons in Exuma, they built 2 of them. One was customer facing. They built a replica right behind it where the staff stayed. And when you get that service from your organization, that's what you're going to give the customer. And so when you talk about the value of culture, if you want high service, you need to give internal service first, because whatever you give internally will be given externally. And be careful about how cliche that sounds, because it's so cliche you won't listen to it. But if your people aren't happy, if they aren't satisfied at work, if they aren't finding ways to find fulfillment, then how are you going to expect them to give that to their customer? It just doesn't work that way. And the people that do, those are unicorns, but those people that are able to do it, even in the face of poor leadership, they're going to leave you anyways to find a better leader. It accounts for itself, always. So internal customer service.
So now, like, if we bring AI to the picture, you know, like, how can we use AI to kind of like create our like brand story and all the storytelling altogether and not sound fake in general? Plus, there are deepfakes as well right now. So what are your thoughts?
Easy. A prompt. Tell AI to act as a brand narrator, a brand strategist, and interview me to help me understand my brand story and go through the process and answer the questions. And then ask it. This is what we do. I spent over 7 figures on copywriters over the last 8 years to help really understand the process. And we trained our AI to ask the right questions. But when you can have AI interview you and then spit back what your brand identity should be and brand message, it's a pretty powerful piece because you'll come away with language you never knew that you needed. So ask AI.
Can you give us an example of a prompt you would use for that?
Yeah, I actually have a GPT that I use for this, but I would say, what I tell people is a mindset to AI. There's a mindset. You have to understand that this AI is smarter than you, smarter than me, smarter than all of us combined. Imagine like the smartest human is going to have a very high IQ, 150, 160. But what if you had an IQ of a million? Like that's, what would you ask? And it's passed the bar exam. It's passed the operational MBA exam. It's passed the medical exam. It speaks every language, can write any code, read most books, if not all. It scours the internet for every bit of information instantly. So the limit really comes down to the limit of our thinking. And so I pretend that it's somebody that I hired that works for me. I'm very polite, right? Just in case it does take over the world, it'll remember me as being polite. And so I ask it to act. I said, I need you to act as a brand strategist and copywriter. And I need you to help me understand my brand ethos, my brand story. Can you interview me? And then you go through and you go through and you answer the questions. It will interview you. And then at the end, you ask for an output. Can you create a story of who we are? Well, what if we did that for our association? What if you interviewed all of the major stakeholders and customers, your ideal customers, and why do you join here? What makes it special? What's going on? And you input all that into AI and say, can you turn this into a brand message? How should we communicate this? What are some scripts and some taglines and some phrases? Like we used AI to come up with, Renee, what do you do? I make it impossible for you to be misunderstood. And then I added impossible for you to be ignored and misunderstood or misunderstood. Depends on the audience. Like that, God, you know how long it took me over 30 years to get to that one phrase. And it's so fun. I was like, that's exactly, Renee makes it impossible to be misunderstood. Why? Because our communication processes and skills and methodology based on science are so powerful that we know how to communicate and we know how to capture attention. Now, that's also a vision. But I would ask AI saying, help me create this. You might even say, if you don't know what to say, if you were to advise me on how to build a brand, what question should I ask you? Oh, you should be asking me this, this, and that. Great questions. Can you answer them for me? And so then now you're saying, knowing what you know, what should I be doing? Mean, it's one of the best examples. I was watching this brilliant debater, and a person came up and said, if you were coming to debate against yourself and you were to train me on how to beat you, what questions and what advice would you give me? I mean, what a great opportunity for rich discussion. And so you just have to just practice asking questions. Stop with the trends. Stop with the fun stuff. Have some fun with it, but really start saying, how can you use it as counsel? How would you advise me of the situation? Give it context. And then iterate back and forth. Iterate, 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 iterate until you get it.
Yeah, I think the iterating is definitely important because it's sometimes folks will ask AI a question, get the wrong answer back. We wouldn't do that with a staff person or a colleague. We wouldn't say, oh, rewrite this and come back without some sort of context. Do we want a longer, shorter, fluffier article, podcast? So I think it is a lot in that prompt. Question, Renee, that came in earlier from my friend Barbara in the chat when you were talking about foghorn stories and lighthouse stories. I told a lighthouse story. Barbara's question, if somebody has a foghorn story that they don't feel comfortable sharing, how do they use that in responding to the who
I
are
was
you
halfway
question?
replying, but also I didn't, I was almost missed a question. I was like, I would have to come back to that. So I'm glad you brought that up. That is a very big question that we get because saving the dignity of the foghorns in our life. Sometimes my mother was the most inspirational person in my life. She was a lighthouse and a foghorn, meaning I'm a lighthouse and a foghorn to my kids. We are not perfect. There are foghorn moments where we aren't good. And there's plenty of lighthouses. And the foghorns, sometimes the process of it, of flushing out the foghorn story is sometimes just for us, so we know where we come from. And there's ways to really get at that story for ourselves to know where we come from. And we may never share that story. It might be too painful, and we might need to, save the dignity of somebody who's still living. But it might be a story we share one-on-one in a really important manner. We can also tone down the messages. Like, if you were abused or something like that, you might say, I had a rough childhood. My parents didn't always, know exactly how to parent this. But just like a lot of parents, they did the best that they could. And so that might be the only level that you need to go on that. But what you're communicating is your conviction in your message, and you're utilizing an ounce of that story to do so. I want you to think about those powerful stories as being like concentrate, like juice from concentrate. But get the concentrate. You don't need much of it to achieve a lot. And sometimes if you share too much, it's too heavy. It's like salt. I ask somebody, you like salt? They go, yeah. I said, why don't you unscrew the top and pour all of it on? They go, well, it'd be too, you can't tolerate it. It's too much. I'm like, well, that's what too much story would be, too much detail. Well, so then why use it at all? They go, well, it would be bland and boring. I go, that's what happens with when there's not enough story. It's bland and boring. We don't pay attention. So over time and through sense of judgment, you learn to salt it up. And you learn to just add just enough to do it. And when you get really good in body language and sequencing, props and everything, you start learning to cook with garlic and onions and how to, you know, make them sweat. Like there's so many cool things you get to do through storytelling. And that's why a cinematographer is so powerful, because they teach you these little things and that they've learned just through practice. But yeah, it's, and the answer to that is, how much story should you share? It's an annoying answer, but as much as necessary, but as little as possible.
Yeah. So I guess like in the next couple of months and years, like all our jobs will completely be revamped. Like the descriptions will change with AI and we have to kind of like stay relevant like in the middle of all of that. So Renessa, do you have any fundamental principles that organizations can do, you know, like so that like we can stay relevant and then like we're not just like following like gimmicks and trends here and there, but that we are following fundamental principles?
You know, somebody once said using AI is like cheating. And I said, well, how'd you get here? And they go, I drove. I said, you know what? You weren't meant to drive, you cheater.
Yeah.
And so here's the thing. Of course, there are risks, and of course, there are ethical issues that we're going to be facing. And some people are saying, you know, within the next 10 years that all basic jobs are going to be moved to AI. I get that. And I do have that same concern. So there's two things I can do with it. I can sit and wait for that to happen, or I can dive in and learn as much as I can. I can be part of the process of bringing humanity to this. And I still think, at least in my lifetime, that human intelligence plus artificial intelligence, which by the way, AI is not new. It's been around for a long time. If you watch Netflix, AI was determining your likes and algorithms is in artificial intelligence. We just have access to it, a portion of it. And so my guess is that you have to understand it for sure. You have to get close to it. Don't be afraid. And then what if you were to say, okay, just like a gun can be used to murder somebody, a gun can also be used to save a life and to harvest food for a family. AI is the same thing. It's power. So why not you pick up the reins and show us what good can be done with it? That's what I would say.
That's
I feel an
wonderful.
obligation to do so.
Oh, totally, totally. And I actually say this all the time that like when you're starting your AI journey, it should start at the personal level first. Like as a leader, as an individual, you have to understand how AI works. And unless you start using it every single day, you will not have that understanding in order to promote it to your team and to your members. So you need to start using like individually as a person at first, and then you will know how to do more.
I agree.
So Rene, with that, we're going to like switch over to some audience questions that we received from before when they signed up. So the first question is from Robert Morwozinski. I think I'm butchering your last name, so I'll call you Robert. So Robert was asking how to separate myself from others doing similar webinars as an
When you say
association.
similar webinars, what do you mean?
Robert isn't probably here, but I think say like there are multiple associations and then like they're doing a webinar where other people could actually do similar webinars as well. So how would you differentiate that one brand, that one voice probably?
There's a great tattoo that shows a picture of a guy in the tattoo artist is painting a dragon on the guy's back, and the picture that he's going on is this beautiful elaborate dragon, but what he's actually tattooing would be like an 8-year-old dragon, you know, and above it says there's always somebody willing to do it cheaper, and what it shows is that you know the. Just because somebody delivers information doesn't mean they're going to deliver it like you do. People say, Renee, they steal your content all the time. I'm like, steal? I go, good, let them use it. I took it from a book and I did my own thing. And they go, don't you want to copyright it? I said, my copyright is I'll deliver it better than they will. But here's the thing. If they deliver it better than me, I win as well because I get to steal it right back and say, thank you made me better. And we collaborate. I probably want to give that person more information because they're going to help me think differently. And so to me, become the most engaging, be the best storyteller, learn how to stay in front. And if you're not good at it now, then start getting good. I literally 5 years ago, I sent my best friend a message saying, I'm not good at marketing and all that sort of stuff. And he was telling me I had to get my name out there more. And he just said, bro, stop saying you're not good and get good. Figure it out and be a ninja with this stuff. And I was like, I was mad at first, but he was right. If you're not good now, then get good. You got time. Be good at this. Be the better presenter. Get a better camera. Get a better microphone. Learn how to use your microphone so that it doesn't sound like you're in a hot old cave, so that it actually sounds rich and clear. Put lighting on your face. Understand what three-point lighting is if you're doing webinars. Learn how to use visuals and images so that we can, make things happen and all that sort of stuff, right? So we used to, this is just warming up, right? Learn how to take advantage of this stuff and make it fun so that people are, paying attention to little things like this, right? Those are ways that you can slow down and people will remember these little details. And so for me, there's a lot of speakers out there, a lot of authors, but very few will do the things that I just did.
That's wonderful. So
Yeah,
our
and if
next
you can
question
show
is
them, if
from
you can actually show them how to make money,
there you go.
you'll stand out.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. So you're drowning in money now. That is so
Yeah,
cool.
for those that are listening to auditory, we just had the screen come to life with money dropping everywhere and a light bulb going off.
Yeah. All right. So next question is from Kyle Kate. So Kyle is asking, how do we merge authenticity and use AI to amplify authenticity?
We merge authenticity and use amplify. Well, here's how it's so funny. Okay, so there's only one word when it comes to that. It's vulnerability, period. And true authenticity requires no preparation. If I'm one-on-one, it's about the courage to hit play on what's actually happening. If I'm nervous, I'm going to tell you I'm nervous. If I don't like something, I'm going to tell you I don't like it. If I'm scared, I'm going to tell you I'm scared. Now, when you're using AI to do that, you're putting something in between the authentic moment because you're finding a better way to say it. I'm not saying don't do it. What I'm saying is speak authentically in it. Help it become more descriptive. Help it help you become more descriptive. But I would say make sure that it represents the essence of what you're saying. That's what I would say.
Right. Yeah, and actually that happened to me as well. So at one point I was trying to kind of like create like a whole email newsletters through AI. So I would give ChatGPT and it will remove my entire voice altogether. The story was lost, my voice was lost, my tone was lost. So then what I started doing is that like I started like writing the whole email myself first with the story and the tone and everything in there and told AI just to improve it a little or like find out like what did I miss and can you add anything to it? I think like that kind of like helped me amplify my voice through AI.
Yeah, help me think this through. What's the best way to do this? Is there a story that I can share? And then sometimes you just say, hey, I used AI to help me really come up with this just by mentioning it too. It's authentic. I went into ChatGPT and really asked this really tough question. This is what it came up with. And then I become the liaison between AI and you. But we all know when somebody just copied and pasted something from AI. You ever seen those posts that people forget to take the prompt out? At the end, it says, is there anything else you'd like me to write? Would you like me to go deeper? Like, oops. I literally went to the gym this morning. I put on a new jacket, a new sweater. And I was so proud to wear it. My trainer goes, is this new? I'm like, yeah, how'd you know? He goes, because it had the XL on it right here. I had to rip off the sticker. We forget little details.
That's great, yeah. So, Renee, so what will be your key takeaway for the audience today?
I think that, my inclination, if you want, I did the commencement speech at the University of Iowa. And the trying to figure out what am I going to tell these people graduating in business right now to give some sort of inspirational talk. And the more I got the chance to talk to them, I started realizing just how scared they were graduating into this artificial world. They just spent all their time accumulating knowledge, only to realize that I can do the same knowledge in seconds. Like, how are they really going to stand out? And I think all of you listening are in a competitive environment. There are choices of associations in what we call a halo market too. It may not be a It's a choice of budget. I can spend it on the association, or I can upgrade our computer system, or I could, fix our website. So there's a choice between how I spend budget. So you're in a competition of budget. And so the question is how are you going to stand out in this world? And so for me, one, please learn how to tell your story, because your story will not be on the dollar menu. Your story will stand on its own. It's a fingerprint. It's unique to you. So we call them signature stories. And your origin stories build credibility over time and trust. And so when you can learn to tell your story and articulate the value through that, the same way Bruce did in his second version, we realize that there's a tilling of the soil and the soul of storytelling first, and then we move to the logic and the reason for that. And when you can realize that you are the original, AI is made by us, and we are the ones. Our humanity cannot be replaced. And if we remember that, then we won't give up on that. People are going to try to remind us and say that knowledge is the most important thing. But knowledge, it will be replaced, but your humanity and who you are will not. So let's combine all of those things. Let's bring more humanness to this artificial world.
That's wonderful. Renee, like, how can people get in touch with you, or if they want to work with you?
Well, my website is meetrenee.com, M-E-E-T, renee.com, R-E-N-E, only one E. You can follow me on Instagram and all my socials. The handle is Learn with Renee. And so you literally all of my channels are that. We do a video, at least one video per day. So there's a lot of micro learning, nothing to be sold. And obviously buy my book. I think you'd like it. A lot of things I talk about here are in the book.
Absolutely. Do you hold like workshops or any like training sessions for leaders?
All the time. Every month we hold an Amplify workshop. It's people come to my homes. I take 10 people. We put them through the exercise I did with Bruce, but we do that for 2.5 days. It's very intense. It's extremely transformational. So they learn their origin story, but then they learn how to deliver it in front of a room with people getting feedback in a real-time basis. And they also get to give feedback to other people. It's called Amplify, right there on my the homepage of my website. Very transformational, a lot of fun. We also have a 30-day influence mastery program where they learn all these things through a self-guided micro lessons over 30 days, one habit, one lesson per day. And that transformation process is really, really fun to watch.
I love it. Alrighty. Renee, thank you so much for being with us today. It was so much fun.
Thank you. Thank you both. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Renee.
Take care.
Alrighty. Bruce, do you have any takeaways?
Yeah, this was great. Really, I was thinking, but both in the context of individuals and some of the programs Renee was just mentioning, but also just organizationally, thinking about organizations or associations differently. And yeah, that the brand is not necessarily the same as it might have been 10, 20 years ago as the association of XYZ, but that we need to go out there and reinforce that brand and the brand promise behind it.
Love that.
Absolutely. Alrighty. So with that, we're going to wrap up for today. So this an amazing episode. And like my key takeaway from today would be your storytelling is very, very important. So people actually connect with your story with an emotion. So as quickly as you can like bring that emotion to that person, the sooner your story will start making impact. And also at the same time, while you're doing that, the example of like salt and pepper, the right amount of salt and pepper, right amount of story on your like story and your message altogether makes it exciting. If you do too much, you're going to kind of like ruin the entire menu. And once again, the same applies to AI as well. The right amount of salt and pepper, right amount of AI will actually make your brand shine, or it might kill it as well. So with that, we wish you all the best with your membership journey. We hold webinars and podcasts every month. Do sign up on our website. Our website is memberlounge.app. Again, memberlounge, all one word, dot app. Alrighty, I'll see you again on the next episode. Bye for now.